Warming temps and heavy rains can spell trouble for your home. Don't wait for a problem. Get a free foundation inspection from PermaSeal. Stay dry, stay protected. For peace of mind, call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
Is this Jack Jones? This is such a splendid way to start a Sunday morning. Thank you, Eli.
Jack Johnson, but yeah.
Oh, yeah. Whatever. Jim Jones, he had the Kool-Aid punch. Jack Johnson, didn't he do the soundtrack to Curious George?
Yeah, that's what this is from.
Oh, see, this is bringing me back. You touched on a nerve already. Good morning, everyone. Happy Sunday morning. I'm Wendy Snyder. Hi, Dave Schwann. How are you?
Hey, good morning to you, Wendy.
And
good morning, Eli.
Yeah.
Good morning, Tony.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, good morning. You said that was from Curious George?
Yes.
Yes,
oh my gosh,
like
I love that.
Opening like credits, the title sequence of the movie is too upside down.
Oh, yes, God. All right. First of all, I liken myself to Curious George because I'm always curious about things and I ask questions a lot. And then it makes me think of my boys because they loved Curious George. There was one year Dylan, who's now 23, was the man with the yellow hat. I made the cutest costume for Halloween, and I just took like a straw hat and spray painted it yellow, and then he had his little Curious George, which I believe is still in his room. My son Michael, who just turned 27, he loved Curious George. And I was just thinking about them being little boys because the LaGrange Pet Parade was yesterday. And I used to take the boys with Jimmy Mack, and I would get a wagon for the boys. No, for the cooler and Bloody Mary fixins. And we would bring the wagon of Bloody Mary fixins, and the boys would, you know, ride their bikes, their little tricycles or whatever, and we'd sit in little foldable chairs and watch the LaGrange Pet Parade. I grew up in Brookfield, and I remember the LaGrange Pet Parade because it's been around since 1947.
Wow.
And it was the 80th anniversary this year, and whoops, I missed the parade because I was here on the air filling in for Lou Manfredini and having a great time. And Dave Schwann, I inspired you to do something.
You did. I was listening yesterday morning for a while, and they were talking about cleaning furnace filters and changing furnace filters and how important it is. And they are right. It is. I've been told that by a number of heating and air conditioning people that know what they're doing. So when I was home yesterday afternoon, I thought this is a good day to do it. And I got out the vacuum cleaner. It's very easy for me to do it where I live. So I got the job done and ready to go for the summer.
Well, that is fantastic. I try every time I'm on the air to learn something because I'm like Curious George, and I try to make a difference. So I hope I made a difference in your life.
And I hope other people got inspired to do it as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. So the pet parade, I didn't see it this year, but I understand that good old number 99 Dan Hampton was the grand marshal this year. And I have been the Grand Marshal. Yes, I have, but they've never asked me back. And so has Steve Dale, because he's a noted pet expert. And yeah, so the LaGrange Pet Parade began in 1947. It started as a little tiny parade. It was put together by the LaGrange Chamber of Commerce, whose president was Ed Breen. And we know him as the guy who owned Breen's Cleaners. And he intended to bring the community together around the idea of a pet and a child costume contest. So just a few kids and pets paraded down the main street of the village, and the parade grew to include entries from local schools, businesses, nonprofit groups, but was still always planned by local business people. And throughout the 1970s into the 1990s, the WGN television network actually televised it. It was a big deal. And it still is to us in that area. No longer on WGN TV. They don't broadcast the parade, but the radio station at Lyons Township High School, LTTV, has filmed and broadcast this event on local access cable and on YouTube. And it was really fun. I missed it this year, but really, now, and my boys are older, and now I just go to the pet parade parties, which happen a lot in LaGrange. And I have an observation about some drinkables. Can we discuss that when we return?
Yeah, let's do it.
First of all, I want to say that's a great story in itself about how the parade got started.
Yeah.
Local businesses bringing the community together. I love it.
I love LaGrange. It is, I grew up in Brookfield, now live in LaGrange, and I'm proud of it. And that is a sweet little story. There are pictures at the LaGrange Historical Society and might even be on the Pet Parade website. But it's like four kids and dogs walking down the street. That's how it began, and it's grown so much. So thank you for mentioning that, Dave Schwann.
Absolutely, yeah.
We're going to take a quick break and then some alcoholic observations. Not that I am one. I'm just saying, you know, alcoholic beverages.
Wonderful subject for a Sunday morning.
All right. Yes, it's 720 WGN. Good morning to you. Happy Sunday. It's Wendy Snyder here. And okay, so I misspoke. I meant like alcoholic beverage observation, but I said alcoholic observation. I'm a big fan of Miller Lite. I think it is a fresh, crisp, refreshing beer all year round. I like a good Corona with lime for the summertime. There's also Jalisco Estrella that is a really good beer from Mexico that I also enjoy. But lately I've been getting into these high noons. Has anybody had a high noon?
I have.
Yeah, maybe one or two.
I don't know how I feel about them. I am really kind of obsessed with the peach high noon. It's really delicious. I don't know that there's any alcohol in there. I know there is, but I was reaching over for my Diet Coke this morning, and I was disappointed that I wasn't tasting something peach. I mean, you can't bring these to work or anything, right? I guess it has the same alcohol content equivalent to like a light beer. They come in various flavors, but I have a problem with these high noons. The can is too thin. It gets warm so quickly. I was talking to one of the powers that be here at WGN Radio, and she was telling me that at a graduation party from college, there were like half-empty cans of high noons, and it's because they get warm too quickly. So either they have to make the can thicker, or they need to make the can smaller because your hand warms up the high noon container.
Would it cost more materials if they made like a thicker can to like insulate it better? Because like it feels like maybe that's their way of like kind of cutting costs a little bit, having the thinner, more easily like recyclable metal.
Yes.
But it definitely has a big downside that way because you have a whole lot of more wasted product like that too.
I know. And like I don't... Well, not anymore. I don't drink alcohol that quickly anymore. Sometimes even a bottle of Miller Lite gets warm quicker. But did you know you're supposed to hold the bottle at the very top? Because then as you drink it, your hand warms up the empty part of the bottle.
The more you know. You got some hacks now.
Never really thought about that.
Because if you hold it at the bottom... Your hand warms it. Again, alcoholic observations, but I meant alcoholic beverage observations, but this actually might be a new segment that we're going to do on Sundays. I really, you're not drinking fast enough. That's your issue, says 815. I know, but
I was going to say.
I did.
You talk about high noons, though. I like that part of their can, though, is that it is resealable. The top
what?
Of the high noon cans have a resealable tab at the top. So, like, if you're not finished with it or if it gets warm, and you can kind of close it, seal it, keep as much carbonation in there as you can. And you can pop it in the fridge, try to save as much of that as you can in case.
Okay. How do you reclose it? What are you talking about?
Is it closing it completely?
Yeah, so like the tab on the top of like those cans specifically, you like pop it open with like a key or something, like you have to like get underneath it, pry it open, and then it slides. It doesn't like just pull like a metal flap at the bottom, and you can slide it like open or closed.
Okay, now I have to go get some, because are all of the cans like that?
I've seen it on High Noons. I'm sure there's more and more that are been coming up.
So can you just open it regularly like a pop top?
Pretty much, and then that way you can also like close it, so that way if you need to go somewhere, you don't have an open can that you're walking with too.
Okay, I don't think that is correct.
Well, you'll have to test that out later today.
Because, all right, this is just so dumb. I walked yesterday to a pet parade party, and I don't know why I did this, but I put the Saran wrap over the top of my Solo cup. And because I thought you're not supposed to walk around with open alcohol. Isn't that true? So if you seal up the High Noon, but it's half gone, it's like it's still been, the seal's been broken, I guess.
If you had like a bottle of something you could screw back on, would that be the same though?
Yeah, I think once, like, and that's driving. I was talking about walking and how stupid.
Right, though. Yeah. Of course not driving.
Yeah, no, obviously. But see, that too is a question. What if I have a half a bottle of Grey Goose that I'm bringing to a friend's house, but I think it has to be in the back of your car, like in the trunk or the hatchback part?
Yeah, that's what I've always heard.
These are some interesting thoughts.
We're the experts, right?
Yeah. All right. We have some more. 224, great idea. Use a Yeti hard-sided koozie. This will keep the High Noon cooler for a very long time. 630, don't you use a koozie? First of all, that is the dumbest word ever. Who came up with that, and why is it called the koozie? Now, see how curious I am? Does anybody know the history of the word koozie?
We only have so much time today, Wendy. We have a short show.
Oh, well, how are we going to get to the answers today? The koozie originated as an inverted spin on traditional British tea cozies. Okay. The concept evolved from an everyday realization into a cultural staple through a mix of consumer ingenuity and clever mass marketing in the 1980s. Good golly. In the 1970s, the invention, heavily attributed to a Texas construction worker in 1979, who noticed that pipe and tubing insulation fit perfectly around his soda can, keeping his hands dry and the drink cool. The name is a direct play on words of a grandmother's fabric tea cozy. And Frank, we should know this name. This is someone you should know. Frank, I don't know how to say his name. Krasovec, owner of San Antonio's Radio Cap Company, discovered the makeshift koozie in a convenience store, bought the design patent, and officially registered koozie with a K as a trademark. This was fascinating. See the things we learned?
This does need to be a segment now.
Can I get a question? You said koozie with a K?
Yeah, that's what they say.
I always thought it was C.
Yeah. Well,
now another...
Another question.
Door just been opened.
I'm going down the biggest rabbit hole I have ever created in my life. I'm just trying to tell you that the can is so thin on a High Noon. I don't know. They have to change them. Yes. I've now put ice in it, and it seems to work that way. Oh my gosh. All people call in. I can't keep up with the text so quickly. 312-981-7200. And I am looking at the slider top. I don't know if that's a High Noon. All right, I have to speak. Eli sent me a picture of a resealable can of High Noon. This is an invention or a plastic item. The top of High Noon cans don't look like that. They're just a pull tab.
Every can I've seen looks like that. I mean, it makes great radio we're talking right now. But
I know.
Every High Noon I've seen has that plastic thing on top of the tab where you can, like, slide it and have
Yeah, like that. I saw that picture too, but I've never seen those in person.
Yeah,
ever.
The picture that Eli sent that I will share with you now as I describe it, it's like a plastic slider top that's a blue, light blue, baby blue plastic slider top that you could close it off. I have never in my life seen a can like that, although I just recently started drinking them. So now I will be looking for that. Resealable. Oh, my God, the things we cover here, we're going to do it all morning long. I hate to put this conversation on hold, but we are going to do some news. We're going to check in with Shawnee's far-flung forecast. We've got Dr. Santina Wheat coming up. And I'm sorry, what, Eli? So I just don't know what to do with these koozies. There's also a thing that has, I don't know who makes it, but you keep the interior part in a freezer. It's got a liquid core. And then you, again, Yeti has come up with some amazing things. It's like a frozen core inside, but it doesn't dilute your beverage. So you can pour it inside this. I haven't seen that either. I mean, you people are the good ones. What did I call this segment? Alcoholic observations?
Yeah.
We might have to...
We'll workshop it.
Yeah, we may have to continue doing this. But we'll get to the bottom of this, I promise. We learned where the koozie came from. And later on today, we are also going to celebrate America's 250th birthday of famous, iconic brands and popular food items that have been around for over 250 years. But news right now with Shawnee here on 720 WGN. And at 9:33, it's time for Shawnee's far-flung forecast.
Thank you, Wendy. Good morning, everyone. Get out your compasses and protractors and newfangled devices. We head south today to a city that is rather well known and the second largest city in Oklahoma, that being Tulsa, Oklahoma. Population 413,000. It was settled nearly 200 years ago in the 1820s, and of course, is part of the oil-rich industry there, making a large amount of money in the area there. And it's a beautiful city to visit, a lot of great buildings, Art Deco buildings there in particular. But we bring up Tulsa, Oklahoma today because it is also the site of a rather dark part of American history. Because 105 years ago today, an event called the Tulsa Race Massacre occurred. Now, this was taking place in a section of Tulsa that was home to a prosperous African-American community, and one of the most prosperous African-American communities in the country at that time. It was in the Greenwood neighborhood where race riots took place starting May 31st and June 1st, ending when the National Guard was brought in by the governor. It is still not known how many people were killed. About 300 or so were injured, and several hundred administered to hospitals with injuries. The other part about this is that this part of Tulsa history was kept under wraps for quite a while until the 1990s, when a commission was formed by local residents there and also the local government within Tulsa to investigate what did indeed happen there. Property damage estimated at nearly $2 million. That's 105 years ago. It would be over $30 million today. But 105 years ago today, 1921, what is known as the Tulsa Race Massacre occurred, and it is still being investigated by local authorities there to this day.
You know where I learned about this? And it was just recently, HBO had a series called The Watchmen.
Yes.
Based on the movie, which was great. I did not know anything about this prior to that.
A lot of people didn't, and it didn't come out until, like I said, 25, 30 years ago. And I've heard that citizens who grew up in Tulsa may not have even known about it. It was really, really kept under wraps. And when you have an entire neighborhood destroyed like this,
Yeah.
Over a racial incidents. It was really, really a tragedy. But sunny skies there in Tulsa today, 81 right now. I might mention also Tulsa's a great stop on Route 66.
I look forward to you mentioning whether or not your stops are on Route 66. Excellent. Well, thank you so much. And I do believe that that HBO show did influence the long overdue attention to the Tulsa race
Very
massacre.
Very long overdue.
Yeah. So thank you so much for that. We're going to take a quick break and then find out what we should know in the world of health. That's coming up next here on 720 WGN. And good morning to you. It's Wendy Snyder, and this week in health is sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. And please welcome back to the show Dr. Santina Wheat, Program Director, McGaw Northwestern Family Medicine Residency at Del Nor Hospital. Hi, Dr. Wheat.
Hi, how are you this week?
I'm doing great, and I have some questions for you. My life is an open book, so let me go back to Thanksgiving. I got the flu really badly, and because I like to share things with my husband, I shared the flu with him, unbeknownst to me. Well, he has asthma, so that turned into double pneumonia, and he was in the hospital for 8 days. He has fully recovered, but now I see Kyle Busch in the news, and he was such a nice guy and a great guy, and he died at the age of 41 from bacterial pneumonia, but it progressed to sepsis. So I need to know, first of all, what is sepsis?
Yeah, so sepsis is when the bacteria gets into your blood. And when that happens, it can happen for a variety of different reasons. It can be from pneumonia. It can be from an infection that's someplace else, whether it's like a kidney infection, whether it was a bone infection. A variety of reasons can have you have sepsis, but ultimately bacteria in the blood. And then your blood pressure usually drops, your heart rate really changes, you become very sick very quickly.
Yes, because all this kind of happened to my husband. And I guess in Kyle Busch's case, they didn't get him on antibiotics quick enough. Is that what? Because it just scares me now a little bit because, you know, I am a hypochondriac.
No, So sometimes that can be what happened. I don't know specifically what happened in this case, but often, yes, we treat people with antibiotics as quickly as we can when sepsis is identified, often with fluids as well, often need to be in the hospital and be monitored for this. Many people experience it and recover, but it really is important to get treatment as quickly as possible.
All right. Well, now it has me worried about other things because I am a bit of a self-surgeon. A lot of times I will sterilize a needle, and if I have a blister or something, boy, blisters hurt when you get new shoes. So sometimes you pop a blister and, oh my God, instant relief. And then I put some alcohol on it and I put a Band-Aid, maybe some Neosporin or some Aquaphor. But now I'm worried that I can develop sepsis from these home surgeries.
You know, you could. You said something very important at the beginning of that, though. You said that you sterilize the needle first. And so that's really important. If you do that, it's fairly reasonable if you have a blister to let the fluid drain out. What I would say is don't totally take off the entire skin of that blister, though. Because, you know, when you have that blister, there's that little bit of skin that's on top. And
yeah.
If you drain it, then leave that skin there because that is causing the natural barrier. So if you do that, then make sure the natural barrier stays there and then cover it and keep it clean. When we worry about it becoming infected, and I wouldn't normally expect a blister to progress to sepsis to allay your fears just a little bit, but it can become infected. It's when it's open and gets exposed to things like dirt that's out there. So I'm thinking of like many people are probably out there gardening now and getting blisters on their hands with their garden equipment. So making sure that if that happens, that they cover it, they put on gloves before they go out gardening again to keep those areas clean. And so that's really the most important part. And if it starts to worsen, come and see your doctor in case we need to give you antibiotics.
Okay, and increased pain, redness, any kind of fluid developing, that's how an infection looks when it's first starting?
All of those things, the redness is spreading in different directions, especially if you start to get a fever and chills. It's absolutely a reason to be seen because then we're worried about the infection spreading. But absolutely something that's starting to look worse for any of those ways that you just described.
Aren't you going to ask me how I sterilized the needle? Aren't you dying to know?
Well, I have some guesses. I was waiting to see if you would say it or not.
I will say it, and you will tell me if this is okay. I took a lighter and burned the tip of it, and then I poured some rubbing alcohol on top of it. Is that sterilizing it?
That's pretty decent. Just be really careful with that fire.
Yes.
So that's decent for a needle, yes.
All right. See, people, I am not only a hypochondriac, I'm a self-surgeon. A home surgeon, I guess. No. What is the expression? Do as I say, not as I do.
Not as I do.
Yeah.
Right.
Don't operate on yourself at home. And, okay, so sepsis isn't anything we're going to have to be super worried about. But if you develop, I think a fever is a main thing because I know Kyle Busch had raced like a few days earlier and won the race. And then he developed a fever. He was coughing up blood. So there were some signs here that perhaps it had moved forward. Right?
Yes, and I think that's the most important thing for anything. I really think it's important to be aware of what's happening with your body. When things are changing, when you feel like you're worsening, sure, if you have a cold, you don't necessarily need to come see the doctor for a typical cold. But if things feel out of the normal, it's a reason to reach out. At least call the office and we can help decide whether you need to come in or not. But pay attention to changes in your body.
Perfect advice. All right, we're going to take a quick break and then continue This Week in Health with Dr. Santina Wheat. If you have any questions, 312-981-7200. It is WGN. And good morning to you. It's Wendy Snyder, and we are talking to Dr. Santina Wheat, Program Director, McGaw Northwestern Family Medicine Residency at Del Nor Hospital. All right, Dr. Wheat, I know we have brought this up before, but colon and rectal cancer on the rise, even in younger people. And I was reading about now there's a blood test that is included in the screening recommendations for determining your risk or whether or not you have it.
There is a blood test that is available and that one of the organizations is now offering as a recommendation. It is meant to be, though, a recommendation if somebody is really unwilling to get one of the other screening modalities, the colonoscopy, which allows for direct visualization, or the stool test, which is usually a Cologuard brand test. And the reason for that is this blood test is able to identify colon cancers, but it's usually after they have progressed further than what we're able to identify with the other two options. And so if you're absolutely like, I'm not going to go through a colonoscopy unless I absolutely have to, or just the mechanics of dealing with the other test is challenging, this is an option, but it doesn't find things early, which is really what we hope to do when we do colon cancer screening, is we want to find things before it becomes cancer.
Yes, that is key. All right, so it's in addition to the other tests. It shouldn't be your first choice.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
All right, see, this is why we have you on, because we need to know these things. All right, this is a goofy, self-serving question for you, but I plant tomatoes outside, and I was weeding like crazy last year, and I was just, you know, moving my hands, and I was out there for hours just getting rid of weeds. Well, I noticed something in one of my fingers. I developed something called trigger finger, where my finger would just kind of lock up. I went to see a hand doctor. I got an injection. It helped. It went away. But honestly, I feel like since that year of weeding, I have developed arthritis in my hands. There are different types of arthritis, because as soon as I say this to people, they're like, oh, rheumatoid? No, they're completely different things. Explain.
Yeah, so there are a couple of different types, as you mentioned. There's osteoarthritis, which I'm thinking is the type that you have developed. And that is the arthritis that we develop. People often think about it more like in their knees or their shoulders. And that is the arthritis that we develop from the wear and tear that occurs during our everyday lives. And then there is this rheumatoid arthritis, which is more of an autoimmune disease where the body is somewhat attacking itself, if you will, and it actually changes the formation of the hands and the joints. And so there's a lot more stiffness that goes along with it. If it's not treated early, can lead to the joints being malformed and making it difficult to use your hands or other joints that it's impacted by. All of those things we would want you to see your doctor for. The treatments are different. We can offer pain medications for all of them. But past that, for like the osteoarthritis, sometimes it's injections, like you mentioned. The one that you mentioned is more for like a an overuse injury. And some people will also get injections in their joints to help with the inflammation that's there. Sometimes there's procedures that can be done to help the different parts of the hand. For the rheumatoid arthritis, it's more likely specific medications to stop the progression of the disease.
Okay.
So it really depends on what you have.
Did I give myself arthritis from weeding? I doubt it, huh?
I doubt it. Part of the treatment really is continuing to move. And so it's good that you're out there doing those things. I also love that you're out there in the sunshine and getting the fresh air and the vitamin D and all of those things, too.
Oh, yeah, I love
it. So well worth it.
And I don't use gloves because I like to get my hand in dirt. And I have also read that getting your hands in dirt is actually a good way to help your mood. I don't know if it's true, but it works for me. Can we take a phone call?
Sure.
All right. Can you put Dr. Wheat Eli on hold so I don't, I mean, not on hold, but a conference call. We're having a little party line now. Hi, Nick. Dr. Santina Wheat is here. You had a question?
Yeah, thank you. Where I used to live at a few years ago, there's a lady has since passed, a wonderful human being. Called me that she fell down in the kitchen. I was upstairs in my room. I had a little room that I rented in her house. And I saw that she scraped her arm somehow on something around by the stove, or I don't know how it happened. But it was like 2 inches square and maybe it was kind of deep, I don't know how to describe. But it wasn't bleeding actively, but in the beginning she did bleed a little. So I quickly thought to myself at her age, I believe then she was 88, and I thought, you know, if she insists on some kind of local drugstore treatment and, you know, that I go get this or get that, I thought, what if she develops gangrene? Because when you're older, as we know, I mean, like myself who's getting older, it's harder to, it's easier to get sick or hurt.
Yeah, and your circulation isn't working as well.
Right, there you go, yeah. So I called 911 instead right away. Just this is real fast in my mind. I'd rather have a crew come out to look at her, and they decided that it would be best to take her to the emergency room and have her treated. And she ended up spending about 2 weeks in a rehab place where they treated her wound, and everything came out good. See, what I was concerned about, what if it led to gangrene and then she has to have part of her arm amputated? That wouldn't work for her. So I felt I did the right thing.
Yeah.
But, would that be the right thing to do when you have an older person who gets hurt with a might not seem like a major injury, but because of her age, somebody can decide, like in the emergency room, they can decide if it should be advanced to more care. See, it takes it off of you then.
Yeah, Dr. Weed, didn't Nick do the right thing?
I mean, it sounds like you did the right thing, especially since she ended up needing to be someplace for a couple of weeks. So absolutely. I think that every situation is going to be a little bit different. But with the fall and everything that you mentioned, I think it was absolutely the right call, what you did. It sounds like you really helped her out. Thank you so much for taking care of her.
Yeah, that was great. And again, you know, don't hesitate. When in doubt, mm-hmm. I say err on the side of caution. I mean, that's what you should do, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. And another question that was texted to us, perhaps you could help, 815. I just started my GLP-1, which it seems like a lot of people are now. And the question is, where should I be injecting myself and how many pounds a week is it okay to lose? I lost 4 pounds the first week and I just started week two. Any advice?
So absolutely make sure you're checking in with the person that's prescribing it is my first advice. But usually you want to inject medications like this in areas where you have fat. So think about your belly. It could be like your thighs. It could be on the fatty part of your arm. And most people recommend alternating where you're injecting so that you're not injecting the same place over and over and over again so that you don't cause irritation in that area. I do think that it depends on how quickly you need to be losing weight. 4 pounds is a lot in a week, but sometimes in the first week or two, some of that's water weight. And so that's not necessarily a speed I would hope for you to have throughout the treatment course. And it would probably slow down to like maybe a pound or two a week. But really depends on making sure that your prescriber is paying attention to it, making sure that your labs stay normal, and that you're getting good nutrition while you're taking it.
All right, perfect. And we have under a minute, and we're probably not going to get through this. Pam, do you have a very quick arthritis question for Dr. Wheat?
Yes, I was diagnosed with psoriatic arthritis in my fingers. Does that cause the lumps in your fingers, or is that
rheumatoid?
The rheumatoid, actually almost all types of arthritis can cause it. So you can still get it with the psoriatic arthritis, and your treatment for the psoriasis will help with that.
There you go, Pam.
Oh. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And thank you very much, Dr. Wheat. We always enjoy talking to you. I will try not to put my fears onto other people. Dr. Santina Wheat, Program Director, McGaw, Northwestern Family Medicine Residency at Del Nor Hospital. Thank you so much for joining us. Are you going to be gardening this year?
I absolutely am. I'll be right out there with you.
Tomatoes, cucumbers, what you got?
Actually, both. I'm excited about them. I'm hoping they all grow.
Excellent. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you next week. Really appreciate it. And news coming your way right now from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. And good morning to you. It's Wendy Snyder here on a Sunday. And I woke up to some sad news this morning. Dennis Hull, Chicago Blackhawks hockey legend, dead at the age of 81. I thought it was only perfect to talk to Charlie Remeliotis this morning, Chicago Blackhawks studio host here at WGN Radio. Charlie, sad news indeed.
Yeah, good morning, Wendy. Obviously, that was tough news to see yesterday when Blackhawks chairman and CEO Danny Wirtz released that statement, obviously announcing the passing of Dennis Hull. And man, I wasn't around to watch Dennis Hull, and you hear stories about who he was as a player, but anytime Dennis Hull gets brought up, you hear more about what an infectious personality and character that he was. And so I'm sure Blackhawks fans that were able to watch him on the ice are mourning him today, but I think they're also remembering the interactions that they had wherever that may be, at a fan festival, on the street. Like, it feels like he made an impression on every person that he came across.
He played with the Blackhawks for how many years?
It was for 13 of his 14 seasons, so essentially his entire career. And actually, I was just looking this up right before because I wanted to make sure I had this right. But, I mean, he's top 10 in Blackhawks history in games played. Like, he had 900-plus games in a Blackhawks sweater. And so usually when you hear the last name Hull, you think of his older brother Bobby.
Yeah.
He was, top 10 player of all time, and, you know, the impression that he made on the organization. But Dennis Hull was a really, really good player as well. And he kind of, you know, was in the shadows of his older brother, but he was certainly a great player in his own right.
They never played together, did they?
They actually did. I think they played together for 8 of the 13 years. So that had to be a really cool experience for the brothers to play together. And, Bobby obviously passed away a few years ago. So Hopefully they're, you know, they're both in a better place. And, you know, it's funny because Bobby Hall, his nickname was the Golden Jet. Like, that's the, you know, the big nickname. But then Dennis Hall, because he's the youngest brother, he was nicknamed the Silver Jet. So they were the essentially the Jet brothers.
That's incredible. I had that actually on my notes because I thought that was so funny. The Blackhawks issued a statement. I didn't realize he spent 13 seasons here in Chicago. So you're right. Bobby Hull kind of got all the attention.
Yeah, and rightfully so. I mean, he's like maybe the greatest goal scorer of all time, like right up there with Alex Ovechkin and, you know, Wayne Gretzky, Mike Bossy. Like Bobby Hall is obviously the guy when you think about. But, you know, poor Dennis was kind of like always in the shadows of that. But yeah, like want to make sure to, you know, communicate obviously to the Blackhawks fan base how special of a player Dennis Hall was. And again, I wasn't able to see him play, but every person that I talked to about Dennis is like, don't forget him. Like he was a good player too.
All right. Well, Charlie, what have you been doing in this off season?
Yeah. So now we're approaching the Stanley Cup final, which is going to start Tuesday. And so there's always kind of like a lull in the calendar where the playoffs start. Everyone's excited for the first round. And then right before the second round starts, the NHL draft lottery happens, which obviously we know the Blackhawks are going to be picking fourth overall. And so then it's like weeks of doing draft prep of, you know, who could they take? Who's going to be available? Like what, you know, could trades happen between now and then? But it's rarely do we see like significant movement happen during the Stanley Cup final. So I think once this series ends, it's kind of going to be full systems go, like looking ahead to the draft and free agency. So it's kind of the calm before the storm, so to speak.
When does the season start? Because I'm ready.
It's going to start mid-September, but the good news is it's actually going to start earlier than normal because they're expanding to an 84-game schedule next year from an 82. So they're adding two more games, which I believe they're going to start, like opening night is going to expected to start in early September usually, or I'm sorry, late September. Usually it's early October. So we'll get our hockey fix a little bit sooner than last year.
And how's my sweet, I have a hockey sweater, a Blackhawk sweater, of course, Duncan Keith. What's he up to? How is he doing? He's still my favorite.
He's the best. I actually just saw him, it was like a month or two ago when he was in town for the Blackhawks Hall of Fame because he was part of the induction ceremony. And every time I see Duncan Keith, I'm like, it looks like he could still walk like 18 minutes in hockey in the NHL. He retired like sooner than I thought he would because it feels like he was still a really good player. But yeah, always a joy to be around Duncan. But he's coaching his son now over in Canada. So he's kind of found like a rejuvenation of the sport because he's starting to see hockey through his son's eyes. So that's great to hear.
There are a lot of people in my neighborhood who their kids play hockey. That was never even a choice for my boys growing up. That's pretty common now. There are little hockey teams for young kids all over the place, right?
Yeah, and honestly, I think a lot of it has to credit to the dynasty era of the Blackhawks, like the Kane and Taves era, because all of those, you know, like it was like 8-9 years of just the Hawks competing for Stanley Cups, and all of those kids at the time are now adults and are starting to have kids or have kids already. And so now they're like, you know, the kids are getting into hockey more than we saw in like 20 years ago because, you know, the Blackhawks weren't exactly like relevant in the 90s and 2000s. So, yeah, it's great to see like the boom of interest of hockey in Chicago, not just the, you know, the adults, but you're seeing the growth of the game as far as the young players wanting to get involved. That like that's skyrocketed here in the state.
I love it. I don't think I can wait till September. So
we're going to have to wait together because I'm going to need your support as well.
Well, maybe you can work with us here on Sunday morning doing sports. I understand you're going to.
I will, yes. In a couple weeks, I will be joining you. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yay, because you know what? In all the things, I wanted you to talk about Dennis Hall, but I just miss you, Charlie. I miss hearing you on the radio. So
I miss you, too. The feeling is mutual, Wendy. So I'm very much not just looking forward to talking to you, but I'm looking forward to seeing you in person as well.
Excellent. All right. Well, Charlie, we will see you in a couple of weeks here. And yes, our thoughts, our hearts go out to the Hall family. And thank you for joining us today, Charlie. Really appreciate it.
No problem. Anytime, Wendy. Hope you have a good rest of your day.
You as well. I love that guy. I really do. And I love my Blackhawks, and I can't wait till September. What will we do? We're going to take a quick break, and we here at WGN Radio are we're celebrating America's 250th birthday, and I have a little something for you coming up next here on 720 WGN. Sammy Davis Jr., what a treasure he was. It's Wendy Snyder here at Sunday Morning. Dave Schwann, you remember Sammy.
Oh, do I ever.
I loved him.
What an entertainer.
He was really amazing. Was.
Fantastic voice.
He was funny. I'm having little flashbacks to Laughing. And
yeah.
Right. Such a great show. And I watched some of it on YouTube, Laughing, and I don't know that it really still holds.
No, but it's still fun.
It is.
That was a cutting edge program in its time, though.
Yes.
You know, that whole
sock it to me.
Mid to late 60s psychedelia type of thing. That was all over. Flower power, you know.
Goldie Hawn,
yeah.
When I said sock it to me, I remember Richard Nixon.
I was going to say Nixon, yeah. Sock it to me.
All right. Well, we're going back in time, but Dave, we're going to go back a little farther because we here at WGN Radio are celebrating America's 250th birthday this year on July 4th. And each and every show is highlighting some moments in America's history. You can go to WGNradio.com and look under the Spirit of America and find out some interesting history. Well, today we're going to be focusing on the Sunday show on iconic brands that have been part of the fiber of America. Today we are going to celebrate chocolate. Specifically, Baker's chocolate, and there's some interesting history behind this. I'm not a big baker. I more enjoy cooking, but I am definitely aware of Baker's chocolate. And the company was originally founded in 1765 under a different name. It was called Hannon's Best Chocolate. The company was created in Boston by Irish immigrant John Hannon. And Dr. James Baker, who began importing cocoa beans and making chocolate. However, intrigue is involved in this historical moment.
Around that time, there would be.
Well, this is really wild. I was doing some research, and this guy, John Hannon, mysteriously never returned from a trip to the West Indies. He just disappeared. And was declared dead. His wife sold the company to Baker in 1780, and Dr. James Baker changed the company's name to the Baker Chocolate Company in honor of himself. Baker's chocolate began producing chocolate, but it really wasn't meant for baking. Originally, the company made drinking chocolate or hot chocolate, and it wasn't until Baker's grandson, Walter Baker, took over the company that they began producing baking chocolate for our needs in our pantry. As previously mentioned, Baker's chocolate manufactures and sells specifically German chocolate, and it's not just any German chocolate. I'm drooling because now all I want is chocolate. It's the original German chocolate that was used to make the first ever German chocolate cake, which was not made in Germany. How about that?
We're going all over the place here.
I know. That's the story of my life. But it actually got its name from the chocolate it's made from, Baker's Chocolate's German sweet chocolate. Even weirder, the chocolate itself didn't have anything to do with Germany. It's named after the man who created it, Samuel German. I'm not even kidding. Can't make this stuff up.
Wow.
Well, today, I feel like this is a far-flung forecast right now all of a sudden. Today, the Baker's chocolate brand is owned by the Kraft Heinz Company. It's synonymous with the baking aisle. It offers products like unsweetened chocolate, semi-sweet bars, of course, German chocolate, and cocoa powder. And it's part of the history of America as we celebrate 250 years.
Now, you know, I learned something here, Wendy, because I've loved German chocolate cake all my life and did not know that it originated from Germany and that a man named German came up with the recipe.
I didn't know that either.
Wow.
And I am a big fan of German chocolate cake. And the whole deal here, it's distinctive coconut pecan frosting. It is so good.
Oh, I know.
I just now I want German chocolate cake. I've talked about this in the past. I am so suggestible, but even to myself. Now, I have you ever had a homemade German chocolate cake?
My mother may have made one, yes.
Really?
Yeah.
All right.
A long time ago, but yes, Mom was a great baker.
Was she really?
Oh, cakes and pies, yes, indeed. Especially fruit pies this time of year. The best apple pie, the best blueberry pie.
Do you have any of her recipes?
Actually, I do. I've got some. My dad kept them. And then when Dad passed away, my cousin and I were cleaning out his place and found these old cookbooks there. So I saved a few of them. She took a couple, I think, because she said there was some value to them and they were having some sort of a fundraiser at church where, you know, they could, you know, be sold and raise money. But I do have a couple of those cookbooks, yes.
You want
me to bring them in?
I would like a pie crust recipe. I'm not great at baking because I like to improvise a lot when cooking. In baking, it's like chemistry. You can't improvise.
That's
you
right.
You have to follow.
Yeah. Exact directions.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you know how I am about following exact directions. It's a little difficult for me. But my cousin Char, for Christmas one year, put together a family cookbook. This is like the greatest idea and the greatest gift if you have a big family. I'm half Italian, so my Italian side, my grandmother had 5 sisters. There were 6 of them together. They all had different spaghetti sauces, and they all put in different secret ingredients. Instead of wine, my grandma's secret ingredient was whiskey. And her spaghetti sauce was almost like chili. It was just so filled with beef and pork and mushrooms, but it was really, really thick. Then Auntie Mary had like a more of a marinara sauce. It was a little thinner. So none of them shared their recipes with each other. It's pretty funny. So one Christmas, my cousin Char, Auntie Mary's daughter, my cousin, she and her late husband Rich put together this family cookbook with a little history of my grandfather or my grandmother and all her sisters and their Italian roots and everything. And this family cookbook is just covered with tomato sauce and stains because I use it so frequently, and everyone contributed a recipe to this book, and I thought it was one of the best Christmas presents I ever got.
I want to taste that spaghetti, the pasta sauce that you said was almost like chili.
That's my grandma's.
With
like the meat sauce?
Yeah.
The meat sauce.
Yeah.
And put that with the pasta. You have one filling meal there.
Yeah, it
wow.
really is. And
yeah.
it's kind of like a bolognese, but without the
okay.
cream.
Mm-hmm.
There's
mm-hmm.
no cream in this. But in the recipe book, the family recipe book, there is a bolognese sauce and, just some really wonderful food. And I'm telling you, every Sunday, man, all I talk about is food because we get so hungry here. I can share that. Well, my sister won't let me share that recipe, Dave, but maybe I'll make it and bring you some and you can freeze it.
Okay.
again, I don't know what it is with, not sharing recipes. And a lot of the Italian pizza places here in Chicago in the suburbs, you know, the Italians get into a fight and then they break up, and then that's how you get Pizzeria Uno and Pizzeria Due, and, you know, we're not going to share the recipe. We'll just go separate ways, and that's how it all happens. All right, news coming your way right now with Dave Schwann here on 720 WGN. It's Wendy Snyder here on a Sunday morning, and joining us is our television man. He is Alex Zalbin. He is the host and producer of the Comic Book Club podcast. You can find him at comicbookclublive.com. Hi, Alex. How are you on this Sunday morning?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on, Wendy.
Absolutely. I always like talking TV with you. And listeners, if there's something you'd like to talk about, 312-981-7200. Something that was brought up in my household the other night, like, hey, do you want to watch this Spider Noir? And I'm like, I'm not really into superheroes anymore. But Nicolas Cage is in it. And I'm like, I don't know if I like Nicolas Cage. What are your thoughts on this?
So this is a series that dropped first on MGM Plus, a streaming service that no shade, nobody has, so don't worry about it. But most people have Prime Video, and the entire 8-episode series is up now. If you've watched the animated Spider-Verse movies, you probably know that Nicolas Cage voices Spider-Man Noir, a 1930s black-and-white film noir Spider-Man. This is, confusingly, a different character, but basically the same thing, but in live action instead of animated. As he investigates mysteries and battles supervillains in a 1933 New York. I will say I do like superhero things, and I do like Nicolas Cage, so this was right up my alley, but it is much weirder than you might be expecting, because it really beautifully hits the black and white film noir look. They originally filmed it for black and white, so it's lit properly, it's everything looks amazing. But over the course of the 8 episodes, Nicolas Cage, as he's wont to do, gets stranger and stranger and stranger. And it just keeps forcing more of that into the show. And again, I liked it. If you're a fan of campy, quirky shows like Batman 66, the Adam West Batman.
Oh, I loved that.
Over the course of the runtime. But it's a weird show. I recommend it. Not for everybody.
I just saw, I don't even remember what I was watching or if it was on the internet or whatever, but the old Batman episode where he was on a surfboard. There was a shark behind him. That is the perfect word, campy. That's what that show was.
And it doesn't quite get to those heights. There's no spider repellent that he pulls out or anything like that. But one of the things that Cage has talked about is he tried to lean into the spider part of Spider-Man for this show. And there's times, particularly in the later episodes, where he's just jumping around the walls like a little spider, and it's very strange. I should also mention one of the other weird things about the release is they released it both in black and white and in color because they felt like teens aren't going to watch a black and white show. So if you go to Prime Video, you actually have the choice to watch all of the episodes in black and white or color. I highly recommend the black and white because I think there's points that the color looks awful because that's not what they actually natively filmed it for. But, you know, if you don't want to watch black and white film, you have that option as well.
That's crazy. I love when they do stuff like that. I really do. All right.
It's very creative. It's really not like anything else on TV. So I appreciate big swings even when they don't completely connect.
And that Spider Noir on Prime Video, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here's a show that I have never seen. I'm betting Tony in the Sports Lounge and Eli in the producer's booth have watched this. I don't think Dave Schwann has, but there's a big finale tonight for Euphoria.
Yes, we talked about this a little bit last week. Euphoria is a show on HBO. It's been running for 3 seasons very sporadically. It first premiered in, oh gosh, I don't have the year handy, but it was a while back, 2019, as a very raunchy, very in-your-face, over-the-top show about teenagers in high school. It caused a lot of controversy for star Zendaya and Sydney Sweeney, but also catapulted them to fame alongside Jacob Elordi and a bunch of others. Now, tonight, we are either getting the season finale, which is what HBO is calling it, or potentially the series finale of Euphoria. And this season has been a big swing that hasn't quite connected as well, in my opinion, as it's turned into this wild, sweeping Western crime saga now that they're outside of high school. There was a huge character death the last episode that really was one of the craziest things I've ever seen on TV. It really came out of nowhere in an insane way. But love it or hate it, it is something that you just cannot miss tonight if you've been a fan of the show. If you haven't been a fan of the show, still a little bit of time to catch up on HBO Max with all of the episodes. It's weird, it's wild, it's definitely for adults. And that is, the final episode is on HBO and HBO Max tonight at 9.
All right, I have a recommendation. Perhaps you're the one who told me about this. I didn't know about it, but I watched the first two episodes and I'm dying. This is the funniest show I have honestly ever seen. It's just what I needed as a nightcap last night. Are you curious?
I am. Which is it?
It's The Gardening Show with Zach Galifianakis. Oh, my God, is it funny? Have you seen it?
I have not yet, but I know that I've talked to a lot of people that are really loving it. My parents are all in on it as well. And that is just a couple of episodes, a couple of short episodes that are currently on Netflix. It was originally to tie into Earth Day. There's only 6 episodes. They're all about like 15, 16 minutes long. And yeah, the whole concept is Zach Galifianakis doesn't know anything about gardening. So he talks to people and talks to kids about it and seems delightful.
It's on Netflix. It's called This is a Gardening Show. Thunderclap Newman, Something in the Air is the opening theme, and I love that song. So right away, I'm like, I am into this. And just watching Zach Galifianakis talk to these kids is the funniest thing you will ever see. He... It makes me laugh so hard. And then he does teach us about certain things. Like we learned he visited in the first episode someone who owned an apple orchard, and we learned about growing apples. And the second one was about tomatoes, and I grow tomatoes all the time. I don't know where he finds these guests. I don't know where he found these kids, but it is the funniest thing I've ever seen. And I just want to mention, he is such a schlub. Can I just say that? He is wearing a t-shirt, and I pointed out to my son, Michael, I'm like, look, there's a hole in his t-shirt right by the pocket. And he's like, that's Zach. I mean, it is.
Yeah, that's kind of the bit. I mean, since he was first really introduced on a wide stage in The Hangover, he's just been this guy that wanders into things. And I think that's the concept of the show, right? Like you mentioned, the tomatoes, apples, there's a corn episode, a compost episode, and it really is this very instructional thing, and I think these sort of things wouldn't work if he wasn't just a guy bumbling into it, so you can feel, you could watch it and you could almost feel smarter than him, but on the same wavelength as him at the same time. He's great.
And the only bad thing that I have to say about it is these episodes are really short. Like, I think the first one's 16 minutes. I want more Zach in my life.
I hope he does more. You know, again, it was an Earth Day special that they put out, so potentially a year until they do more of them. But, hey, he can do – this is a car show, teach you how to fix cars. He can do whatever he wants.
Yeah, and I'll watch it. So, perfect. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we have some more shows to talk about, a Lifetime Achievement Award, and more things television with Alex Zalbin. It's 720 WGN. Oh, we felt you needed a little chumbawamba in your Sunday morning. Wendy Snyder here, and we're talking to Alex Zalbin. He is the host and producer of the Comic Book Club podcast. You can find him at comicbookclublive.com. All right, I am sorry I did not do my homework. I am not caught up on Hacks, but I think I have 3 more episodes to go. What a great final season for this fabulous show.
Yeah, if people haven't checked it out, it is the entire series, all 5 seasons on HBO Max right now. This stars Jean Smart as a aging comedian, sort of a Joan Rivers type who lives in Vegas and ends up getting hooked up with a young comedian played by Hannah Einbinder, who is recently canceled for some offending tweets. That's where it started, but it has grown in so many different ways over the course of 5 seasons as they have developed their personal and comedic friendship. And without spoiling it, the finale came out this week, and generally people were really positive about it. They felt they really stuck the landing. It was sweet. It was funny. It really brought things home. Without spoiling anything, you might want to go back if you haven't watched the finale yet. Go back, watch the first episode. It'll give you some hints, and there's some interesting Easter eggs in this final episode here. But I'm really going to miss these two on TV. They just had such a special relationship, so wonderful and so funny and so heartwarming.
Jean Smart is amazing. She's been on, we were talking about the Watchmen TV series earlier, and she's great in that. I didn't watch her big show that she was in, her first sitcom. I can't think of the name of it right.
Designing Women?
Yeah, Designing Women. I didn't really watch that on the reg, so I wasn't a big Jean Smart fan, but then as I saw her in everything, I started liking her more, and this is the perfect role for Jean Smart.
It is she has had such a long career, and this is, you're absolutely right, a signature role that everybody is going to remember for. It's kind of funny that this final season is about legacy and her character trying to cement her legacy, because really that's what the show has done for Jean Smart. But I'll also give a shout out to Hannah Einbinder,
yep,
who is so funny on the show, does some fantastic work. But again, without spoiling anything, it's really a lot of the finale just has these incredible reaction shots of her that are really amazing. So she has a long career ahead of her for sure, but this has been signature work on her part as well.
Yeah, and she looks fabulous, I got to tell you. The 630 has texted in, thoughts on The Miniature Wife? Will it be renewed for a second season?
That is a great question. So people don't know this one. The Miniature Wife is a show that ran for 10 episodes on Peacock and premiered in April, wrapped up recently. Actually, maybe it all came out in one day. It all came out in one day. And it starred Elizabeth Banks as a woman who was accidentally shrunk down to 6 inches by her husband, played by Matthew McFadyen, who people might know from Succession. This is one we don't have any ratings information for, because Peacock is a little weird about it. But I definitely feel like this one is gaining steam. I hear more and more people talking about it. So the showrunners, I believe, have plans for not just a season two, but subsequent seasons. If Peacock wants to pick it up, they certainly can. They're very sporadic in terms of their pickup, so it's neither been renewed or canceled, but we'll see what happens in the next month or two.
All right. Another show I'm recommending, which I learned about from you, is Big Mistakes, with Eugene Levy's son, Dan Levy. It's Chicago's very own Laurie Metcalf, who's great in this. The show stresses me out so much, but it is so laugh out loud funny. I love it.
Dan Levy is, I mean, at least two for two at this point, if not more, between this and Schitt's Creek. And this was if anybody is wondering, this was picked up for a second season, so you will get more of Dan Levy, Taylor Ortega, who is fantastic on the show as well, coming back for a second season on Netflix, though TBD when, most likely next year, but we'll see.
Just so, so funny. All right, Lifetime Achievement Award happening tonight. Explain this to us.
Sure. It's actually already live on Netflix, because it actually happened last month. There is a AFI Life Achievement Award given to Eddie Murphy in Los Angeles back in April. It was an all-star affair, as you can imagine. Spike Lee was there, Dave Chappelle, Chris Rock, Arsenio Hall, Kevin Hart. I could go on and on, all paying tribute to him and watching him getting this achievement award. It's actually up on Netflix now. I thought it was going to be a nighttime premiere, but nope, it's there. It's about an hour and a half of people paying tribute to Eddie Murphy and then him speaking as well. So if you want to check that out, AFI Life Achievement Award, you can check that out on Netflix now.
Eddie Murphy pretty much single-handedly saved SNL when he was on it. He is very funny. We hadn't heard from him for a while. And is he back now?
I think he's back. I mean, you know, this Lifetime Achievement Award is certainly part of it, but everything that he has done recently has hit enormously. There is the Coming to America sequel, Beverly Hills Cop. So, you know, it is playing the hits a little bit, but it's, they're huge. He's got Shrek 5 coming out.
Next
year, and that's going to be big as well. So, yeah, Eddie Murphy's back.
All right. And Propeller One Way Night Coach. I don't know if I know anything about this.
Sure. You might have seen some pictures of John Travolta walking around the Cannes Film Festival in a beret recently.
Yes.
That is because he's a director now, and directors wear berets. The Propeller One-Way Night Coach is a 60-plus minute short film that just debuted on Apple TV. That's what he was showing off at Cannes. It is based on a novella that he wrote, I believe, back in 1997. And the whole story is this young kid and his single mother taking a old propeller plane one way to Hollywood overnight, and just what happens. It's gotten mixed reviews from people, but John Travolta is a big plane guy. So as you might expect, there's a lot of time spent on shooting the propellers and the engines and the inside of planes. He also cast his daughter in one of the main roles to try to make her into a star. So we'll see what happens there.
And he lost his son, Jet, and his wife, Kelly Preston. And you said this is a single mom and the son and a son. Mm-hmm. I wonder if there's any.
There were. I mean, he wrote it a while ago, but I have to imagine exactly what you're saying, that that was a little bit of the impetus there and putting that in, and why his daughter, Ella Blue Travolta, is in there as well to really spend some time with his family. Obviously, I don't know the guy, but that would certainly track for me.
Yeah. We started the show today. Our producer Eli played Jack Johnson, and I loved the Curious George movie. I thought it was really so sweet. My boys loved it. And now another kids movie. We had John Travolta and his children's book he wrote. But Paddington, which one is this now coming to the big screen?
Oh, sure. This is going to be Paddington 4. Is coming to the big screen. This whole thing has been a huge franchise. Now, anybody who's watched it, anybody who's watched those movies knows there's a little bit of dark humor, but even I was surprised by the teeth they picked for Paddington 4. It is Armando Iannucci, who is best known for Veep, The Thick of It, and other extremely adult, extremely curse-heavy shows like that. I don't think he's ever done a children's thing, so I'm into this. I like Armando Iannucci, huge fan of Veep, but what a weird fit.
Yeah, that is kind of crazy. All right, and we have like a couple more minutes. Is there something we should be watching? Any new things?
Sure. What else should you watch? Widow's Bay is the big one that I've been stumping for recently. We talked about this a little bit a while ago, but on Apple TV, it is a half-hour comedy horror show about a small island that is beset by a curse. Matthew Rhys stars in it, also Stephen Root, and a bunch of other folks that are all great. And that's one that really seems to be catching steam as far as I've seen. It's funny, it's scary. Highly recommend catching up. There was a great duo of episodes that debuted earlier this week that I won't spoil, but are break the format in a really fun way. And there's, I believe, 3 episodes left to go in the season. They're coming out weekly. So Widow's Bay on Apple TV is a great one to catch up with now.
All right. And what do you have coming up on the Comic Book Club podcast?
Sure. We broadcast weekly Tuesday nights at 7 p.m. We have different guests. We have a guy, Kurt Piers, is coming up to talk about his new comic book, Super Mondo Megabutts, from Odie Press. Is going to be this Tuesday night. And then later on in June, we're going to have Todd McFarlane, the creator of Spawn, artist of Spider-Man, and a bunch of other things, is going to be on the show. So that should be a lot of fun as well.
I love comic books, and I have the whole collection of the X-Files comics. So if you ever have anyone on to talk about that, please let me know.
You will be the first person I text, Lindsay, for sure.
Excellent. Thank you so much for joining us once again, Alex. Always great to talk to you.
You too. Thanks, Wendy.
Sure. Alex Zalbin, host and producer of the Comic Book Club podcast. If you're into comic books, and a lot of people are, you can go to comicbookclublive.com. Thank you so much for listening today. I'll be back next Sunday, and I think we're on regular time, but this week we are going to wrap up a little early. For those of you into racing, and who isn't? IndyCar Detroit Grand Prix is coming up next. Eli, thank you so much for your help today. And Tony, thank you. And Dave Schwann, always a pleasure to work with you. 720 WGN.